This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
When we attach a memory to emotion, it lasts longer. If we're having fun whilst learning something that's important, then it's just way more powerful.
People don't remember half as much of what you say compared to half of what you make them feel. And actually, exactly. If you can make them feel something really positive, something engaging, something memorable, that's a feeling, the content tends to stick with it.
That is something that I feel like the safety profession could really bolt onto. We could come forward and say, hey, we can help you do this. Competence is a really big part of what we do. Creating environments where people are happy and healthy and enriched is a really big part of what we do. We are not just about wearing PPE.
We talk a lot about how, as a profession, we don't necessarily get people to work safely, we get people to safely work. But actually, have we ever taken a step back to define what does it mean to work, and how health and safety actually has a place and a position of influence in that?
Is that not inherently the problem, that we are trying to get one size fits all?
Yeah, but do we have the resource and the capacity to do more than that? Is it fair to kind of turn around here and say, all right, it's easy to say we shouldn't be doing one size fits all?
But are we not? We're going to just keep throwing questions at each other here. Are we not resourcing it because we think it is a one size fits all?
Maybe.
The most common theory that I would die on the sword of, and it exists in every single business, no matter how small it is work as done, work as imagined. Every single business. That, for me, is the biggest problem. No one understands work.
Ultimately, there's decades worth of issues that have been picked up. Concerns over the quality of, I think it's titanium, that's come through from Boeing. I mean, the cladding for Grenfell is another great example of that as well. Stuff that should have been safe and fit for purpose that never was.
I don't think we fully appreciate how much assumption we make in the business. And I think a really simple way to play around with this is, next time we're reviewing a risk assessment and you make a decision, just literally voice out, what assumptions are we making here?
Wonderful. Genuinely, that's a really good bit of food for thought to leave kind of the end of the session is, what is right, what is best for business, what's best for safety, and how do we compromise to deliver effective outcomes?
Now it's recording.
Beautiful. That would have been highly embarrassing if you just recorded it. So that's fine.
What would be embarrassing, Pierre?
I'm not going to talk about it, James, because we are strapped for time today. Today is a time-bound podcast, which for us feels more like a challenge than anything else. But legitimately, I will not be able to make a train if we do not finish in the next 40 minutes.
You look very smart, by the way. I like your shirt.
Thanks. Like it's called busting out of my work shirts, thanks to Dad Bod, because I have had twins. And unfortunately, despite having the best meal prep in the world, I've also significantly enjoyed snacking between midnight feeds. And that has not gone very well for many a shirt. So it is Friday. It is blisteringly hot, James. And this is a linen shirt that fits. So
I think it's a really nice shirt, though. I think it looks really nice.
Thanks, mate. Oh, very kind of you.
Mate, you have to realise now you can work out every single day for the rest of your life and you will barely achieve a mid-level physique. That's just fatherhood. That's just fatherhood.
What part of health and safety does that fit into, James?
What have you been up to this week, Pia? We've been together actually a lot this week.
We have. We actually
hang on a minute. Whoa. Was that the first time you've announced the twins on the podcast? I think it was.
Oh, it certainly was. It certainly was.
See, for me, that was just like, you talk about it all the time, but hey, congratulations officially on Rebrand
the Safety. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Very much appreciated. It's been busy. It has been a wonderfully balanced experience of loving my two children immensely. And also feeling like I'm in some kind of war, especially at feeding time in midnight. Nappy changes have been extreme. I have literally had to duck and cover at times. It has been a challenge, but I love them to pieces. They are delightful. Mum's doing really well. And ultimately, we're just all good, if not just a little bit tired, but in a house full of love.
Wow, beautiful, beautiful. Are you, do you want to mention names or you don't want to tell people the names?
I'm going to keep names a secret. They will be referred to as J and S, and I have one each. One's boy, one's girl.
Oh, that's a shame, because I think the names are beautiful.
Oh, thanks.
Okay, not that I'm going to say I think the names are shit. obviously, I wouldn't say that. But I wouldn't have brought it up if I didn't think the names were beautiful. I'd have just moved over.
That's very kind of you.
But I didn't want to get you into a position where I forced you to say names and you didn't want to. Okay, moving swiftly on of this awkward bubble I've got myself backed into. What have you been up to this week?
Oh, James, so this has now been 2 weeks actually coming back from paternity leave, for which I've been immensely grateful for the flexibility that you and Chez have given me through it. So this week has been, I'm going to say, like, kind of back to normal, but it's been quite a busy week for us. We've had two big events. The first one was a hackathon down with CBRE down south in London. That's the second one that we've done for them. Wonderful afternoon going through some quite significant challenges in quite creative ways, using a lot of Lego with a few dozen people that attended for that one, which was ace. And then yesterday, Thursday, we did an event for IOS Yorkshire branch, going through our four squares to failure, which is, as you said at the time, a very, very nice way of saying that we give you a sheet of paper and you divide it into four quadrants. Or four squares, rather. I should have really said four squares rather than four quadrants, but c'est la vie. And literally, we go through all of these different issues with failure, talk a lot about context, introduce some of the wider, I want to say, kind of theories about safety, but it feels a little bit dismissive calling Rasmussen's kind of dynamic failure model a theory, given that it kind of works in practice. But c'est la vie. Yeah, really, really good session. And between that, you know, it's just been a case of, I'm going to say, catching up a little bit, but kind of just working back into life, really, in work post kind of coming back following paternity. How about yourself, mate? Because we've been together for a couple of these days this week.
Not too dissimilar, because obviously we were both at the hackathon. Shout out to Sunit and the team. Thank you for getting us involved. It was a pleasure to do. I did a ISO 14, well, I was part of ISO 14001 audit as well this week. That was interesting. And I've been working from home the other 2 days. Just lots of meetings and bits. I think because we've had just, 2 months of just carnage with, like, you being off, Sherry's not been well, and then Carly, who works for us, obviously, has not been well. And it's just been madness. So this week has been about actually reassessing our position and seeing where we are. So lots of meetings, lots of lead / sales meetings as well, which is still a transition for me to work out how the hell to do that. But other than that, not much different from normal, really. But I've enjoyed it this week. Been a good week. The weather's nice, which always makes... I'm a very seasonal... I'm a very seasonal mood man. So I your internet keeps dropping in and out, FYI, Pete.
Oh, does it? Oh, no.
I'll carry on talking whilst you do whatever.
I'm going to sort it out. I will sort it out. I'll be back.
So I have been doing that stuff and this stuff, and he's gone. And I've got into panic mode. What else have I done? So it was networking, lots of networking, actually. Quite nice networking. So at the back of CBRE's hackathon, so we did the hackathon. If you want to get involved, let us know. Please do. Also, what we're doing, looking to do at the moment, is crowdsource some problems. So if you've got, like, a big problem you're trying to navigate within the world of safety, risk management, anything like that, please do let us know. Either message me, Peter, or Sunit. Or you can email me, james@riskfluentltd.com. And just email me, here's a problem. I'd love to know what you guys come up with in the hackathon. If you want to come along, let us know as well, and we'll get you involved. So we do the hackathon, which is basically like we pick a problem statement, and then we design a workshop that hopefully really immersive. So we try to use very out of the box kind of style of approach, which is kind of the risk fluent way of doing things. And we use Lego, we use games, we use loads of stuff. So we take the problem statement, we kind of design a workshop, everybody comes together, we do the workshop, and then afterwards we have some really cool like networking that CBRE put on, which I think is a really good opportunity for safety professionals to connect and stuff like that. So if anybody does want to come along, message me, Peter, Sunny, any of us, just say, hey, I want to come along. And also we're looking to crowdsource some problems to hack. So if you have got a problem that you'd love to hack, please let any of us know as well. How we got? We're back. Are we back?
We are back. If I disappear this time, James, it is because of your janky internet, not my janky internet.
Yeah. Well, as you left, mine popped up a little like signal thing, but it seems to be doing all right. So, God
knows. Okay, fingers crossed. Fingers crossed, mate. That'd be all right.
But your face is like all like pixelated. So I think it is your janky internet.
I really, right. Okay. Well, it's actually, believe it or not, I'm now hotspotting off the work phone. So let me take it up with my manager. Sorry, James, you can't afford good internet, mate.
I think it's more just living in the out of the fields of
Leeds. It's the biggest, one of the biggest metropolitan areas in the north of England.
You live up north in Yorkshire. Everywhere is fields, as far as I'm southern, and that's what it means to me.
So this brings me to some nice feedback that we've received actually off the back of the Yorkshire event yesterday. So everything went really well. We had literally 9s and 10s across the board, really good NPS scores from that point of view. But when asked, they said, what would we change about the event? There was a very, very clear bit of feedback, and it said, less rugby union talk. And that has to only be from James, who managed to nearly alienate the entire room by telling them the rugby league wasn't real rugby. Honestly, nearly lost the entire room. Ridiculous.
And I,
these Southerners, honestly.
And prior to that point, I've made a lot of North-South jokes. Like, so I'd made like a good two or three like North-South based jokes. Nothing. Just a couple of like, and then I made one joke about rugby league. Jesus Christ. I thought I was going to get chased out of the room. Oh my God.
Close.
There was,
it was
an
close.
Instant reaction. It was an
very
instant.
True. Do you know, I do love it though, because it's coming back in and doing these events on Tuesday and Thursday, it's genuinely driven home actually quite how nice it is to push relatability through a lot of these events. And I know that might sound a little bit twee for a second, but me and you bounce off each other quite a bit. Obviously the people that have heard the podcast know that, people that have kind of seen us do events know that, but being relatable and having, I'm going to say, a bit of banter, I know kind of has certain connotations, but having a bit of fun between the audience and the speaker, oh my God, it literally helps land messages so much more. And actually, one of the other bits of feedback says, massively, one of the bits of feedback that was positive that kind of described it said that safety often feels quite dull. It's amazing to have a laugh once in a while. And we had a laugh throughout the whole session. It was wonderful. And that was a really nice bit of feedback to get. So it's really good. Really good. I think it's respondent number 28, I think, is that one. So yeah.
28. Oh, right. That's a lot of other events as well, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's literally because obviously we've only done this bit recently as we started with this new form. But yeah, check out. I think it's number 28, but it's really nice. Like, it's nice to kind of, I'm going to say, break the mold of boring safety stuff, but we can have a bit of fun with this type of thing, and we can have a laugh as safety professionals, and we can still drive home all the points we want to and talk through some of the really big theories just in a fun way. Yeah. Big up gamification.
I love it, mate. I think that, you know, I remember when I was writing the first iteration of principles for risk fluid and have a laugh was in there, and it still is now. Like that's maintained. Like it really is something, and look, it's not for everyone, right? Some people really don't like my way of operating, and I am very much like, I'm probably too much if I'm honest, but like I quite like to have fun whilst we do it. Ultimately, like memory is like I'm butchering the science, but like when we attach a memory to emotion, it lasts longer. It burns into our brains, right? So if we're having fun whilst learning something that's important, then it's just way more powerful.
Exactly. So, people don't remember half as much as of what you say compared to half of what you make them feel. Yeah, and actually, if you can make them feel something really positive, something engaging, something memorable, it's a feeling, the content tends to stick with it as well. Unfortunately, we tend to see that a lot on the opposite side of things, where people get really incensed and angry about something, And you see it a lot now on social media with rage bait and all these terrible videos that come out that people get really pissed off about. And they say to their mates, oh, geez, yeah, I saw this thing last week, this video. It was terrible. It said this, and this. And you're kind of like, well.
Yeah, good point.
Ashley, like, you wouldn't have told me all of this had it not pissed you off so much.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the same principle, just in a positive way.
Totally. So what's been on your mind? What have you been thinking about? What have you been pondering about, Peter?
Well, do you know, it's a tricky one. I think, first of all, and this is, I don't mean to kind of like blow smoke up your ass for a second, but there's a lot to be said for paternity post, kind of like return to work, basically, following paternity. Obviously, that's been quite a significant part of stuff that's been on my mind. And we talk a lot in business about flexibility and how actually flexibility is really desired from workers, everything like that. And I must say that the ability to be flexible within kind of how I've been able to manage my days, how I've been able to kind of manage going out to customers, making phone conversations, and then also, for example, balance being able to tag in feeding the kids, for example, while my wife's been kind of in the thick of it with only two hands to feed two kids with. It's been wonderful. Like, genuinely, it's made such a difference to my mental health, to my wife's mental health, to know that for the times that I am at home, that I can just kind of tap out for a second. I just quickly need to finish this feed. I'll help with this feed or quickly change them because we've had a big punami type of stuff. And know that that's not only understood, but it's respected by you and shares because of your values as individuals and for how you want to run the business. It means a hell of a lot. So that's been on my mind quite a bit because it's made my transition back into work so much easier than I feel like it could have otherwise have done. So genuinely, thank you. That's the first thing. Secondly, I can't still believe that you alienated nearly an entire room of people for a single rugby league joke. Honestly, I still cannot get over it yesterday. Thirdly, I think we've got a big thing happening in the UK next month, and it is the general election. And I'll be honest with you, it's been on my mind because I cannot genuinely wrap my head around how much significant people of all kind of basically politicians are legitimately lying through their teeth about what they can deliver. It's getting fact-checked, it's getting pushed through, and there's so little accountability when they've got it wrong that it genuinely makes me kind of look at what we would consider to be professionalism in work and think, if this is a bar that's been set within public office, oh God, how are we supposed to show integrity? How are we supposed to kind of live with the values that we have from a professional point of view when the people that we should be looking up to in kind of politics aren't towing that same level of integrity, that same line of integrity? And it's grinded my gears quite a bit. You can see that I might be getting a little bit red in the face here because I'm getting quite incensed internally by it, because it's frustrating, James. It's frustrating. I feel like we spend so much time in safety trying to prove to people that we're doing what's right. It's the right thing to do. We do base everything that we say on the truth, be it quantitative, qualitative, semi-quantitative. And honestly, a part of me just thinks, bloody hell, would it just be easier to just lie to people? Because what's the point in not doing it, to just sell the message that you want to get people to buy into it, just lie to them? Oh, sorry. It's been a lot of stuff that's happened this
week. I wish you weren't so pixelated as you were having that whole conversation, because it really ruined it. But we heard it. Well, I heard it. So hopefully it comes out in the recording. But it was just when you were like, you can probably see I'm red in the face. I'm like, mate, we can't see shit.
A single red pixel, James. A single red pixel. That's it.
Oh, my God. I mean, firstly, thank you very much for the kind words. It means a lot. I'm not gonna say any more of that because I'll probably get emotional, but that what you said there means a hell of a lot, so thank you very much.
You're welcome.
It's nice to have you back.
Nice to be back.
I'd love to given you fucking years of paternity, but it is nice to have you back.
You still can. No, you still can. Don't worry, I'll take it. That's fine. You work away, mate. That's fine.
But funny enough, the politics has been on my mind, but only quite I've actually not thought about it at all. up until I was driving up to the Yorkshire Irish event, and I couldn't think of anything to listen to. And it came up as a review of the Labour manifesto. Fuck it, I've got a vote in like 2 weeks, so I should probably do some kind of research, which I used to be quite into it, but over the last probably 5 or 6, well, probably, 4 or 5 years, I've really fell out of love with it. So I listened to it, and I was actually like, I kept like pondering quite a lot off the back of it about a few interesting things, like how, so they were talking about, they referenced, so I listened to the Labour manifesto review, and then because I listened to that, I was like, they've done one on the Tory manifesto, so I listened to that as well. And interestingly, I'll start with the Tory one, actually. Interestingly, they reference in there that one thing that they're really quite passionate about is getting people back to work. And they reference like this astronomical number of people that are eligible, and I'll say that in quotes, to work, but they are not working. So they're like eligible for work, e.g. they're not, they can work, but they have some form of disability or mental health challenge that is not enabling them to go to work. So workplaces aren't inclusive for people suffering from mental health, or they're not inclusive enough for a physical disability, which I thought was really interesting, that still to this day we're not struggling, we can't do that in the UK. I was like, come on. But interestingly, they started talking about mental health side of things, and there was a lot of conversation about investment in therapy and investment to access to therapy and stuff like that, which I think is a very, very good thing. Not once, however, was the conversation based around solving the what I think is, and they did reference it as well as being one of the main contributors to poor mental health, is how people are at work, how we manage each other, how we interact with each other, the stress caused from work, which I thought was really interesting. And I was like, maybe I'm like, you know, I haven't done enough research on it, but like maybe they do mention that and they don't. But then the Economist, who was running the podcast, said exactly that. He was like, it just frustrates me that there's no conversation around the fact of like all of these people don't want to go into work because they're not mentally able to, or they don't feel mentally able to, but yet there's no conversation around creating a workplace in which people don't get fucking mentally battered. I was like, oh, okay, that's good to, at least I'm not going crazy. That was good that he was kind of backing up my line of thought, which I thought, okay, so I'm onto something here. But then it got me thinking about, yet again, we're not like, we have the HSE management standards, which I know I go on about all the time, but it genuinely is a phenomenal piece of work that is freely available. Anybody can get it. And it's just sitting there, and it's like a big handbook on how to manage people, and you don't have to fucking pay any money for it, yet not referenced at all, not referenced once. And it just, I think, on reflection, Peter, it made me really think about how the safety profession very much operates within a bubble, and I think we're more influential than what we actually are.
Yeah. I completely agree. I absolutely completely agree. And you know, it's interesting that there was something that you just kind of had said then that triggered a thought about the prospects, bit of research that went through 2023, April 2023, right? And it was literally about how there'd been a 200-fold increase in cancellations of HSE investigations due to resourcing. 200-fold. Right? We can put a link down in the show notes for this particular bit as well. I'll just pop it to you in WhatsApp now as well, James, so you've got it.
Yeah.
But literally, I think there's a couple of numbers in here as well that talk through like the number of HSE inspectors that have dropped down, that the staffing level changes have just dropped year on year on year on year throughout the HSE. And you're kind of thinking that, for example, when our regulatory body that has been kind of pushed into a position of having to generate revenue to justify its own existence, is suffering through such significant resourcing cuts, losses, issues, retention challenges that have been kind of picked up by this particular report. It's no wonder that workplaces aren't kind of being proactively engaged with in an educational way that stops people from getting battered. That's because much in the same way that we're talking about politicians at the biggest level that just lie through their teeth, not having any consequences, what's the consequences when there aren't any educational, proactive, regulating experiences for people to be engaged with? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's no... Consumers aren't going to vote with their feet. They don't care. I know that might sound a bit blunt and a little bit cynical, but they don't. Like, it's just we're just not there.
And so the other thing that made me think as well about this, we'll probably loop back around to this point as well, but like in the Labour manifesto, they were talking about increasing workers' rights, which, like, I'm all for. But there was an interesting conversation where the other person in this podcast was saying, I'm concerned about making it harder to get rid of someone in a business that frankly is just everything is done right. They just don't want to work. So I'm worried that businesses are going to be stuck with someone who just doesn't want to work. It's just being a bit of a dick. And I was like, you know what? That's a fair, as an employer now, I was like, that's a fair point. I would hate to be stuck in that position. What a horrible position to be in. And I was like, okay. So they had a bit of a conversation around that. And I thought that was really interesting. But then interestingly, the next point of conversation was the economist then said that if we were to compare this to someone else, to another country that has similar increased workers' rights, it would be France. And they were talking about this. And he said, and then if we look at the British economy, one of the biggest challenges to growth that we have in the British economy is a lack of productivity. So for labour to widget ratio, so to speak, like labour to output ratio, we are not a very productive nation. And that is our biggest issue. And what he's saying here is that if you look at France, they don't have that. They're 25% more productive than we are. And then he went on to say that this relationship that we have with the worker currently, where it is kind of cheap labor, we don't value it very much. We don't therefore invest in it. And he was saying what happens is if you are forced essentially to make an employee work because it's really hard to get rid of them. And when I say to make it work, I don't mean make them work. I mean make the relationship work, make them productive within an organization by investing in them. He was like, it works. We've seen it work. And I thought, well, that's really interesting because that is something that I feel like the safety profession could really bolt onto, could really like... we could come forward and say, hey, we can help you do this. Competence is a really big part of what we do. Creating environments where people are happy and healthy and enriched is a really big part of what we do. We are not just about wearing PPE. We are about creating environments that people want to work in and maybe even potentially go home better than what they came into work. I thought that's really interesting. Absolutely. But yet again, the safety profession, not even in this conversation at all. And I am seriously concerned by our lack of influence within this process.
It's a really good point. And do you know what? While you're talking about that, you've really inspired a couple of questions here. Without getting too Simon Cassin on us for a second, we talk a lot about how, as a profession, we don't necessarily get people to work safely. We get people to safely work. But actually, have we ever taken a step back to define what does it mean to work? And as part of that, actually, what does it mean to be productive, to be competent, to be enriched, to be excited to come to work? And how health and safety actually has a place in a position of influence in that. You know, we spoke with someone today, actually, who's got a very complex job, that was saying that their vision for the next effectively 8 years is to really establish and embed enrichment in the workplace through the lens of health and safety as its kind of primary kind of position. And it was phenomenal to hear this chap talk. Really, really phenomenal to hear that vision that he's going to try and realise over the next 8 years. But it did very much get me thinking, what does it mean to be enriched? And actually, for them, I'm going to say, kind of especially Gen Z, iGen type stuff, what does it even mean to work? And if we as safety professionals aren't contextualising what does work mean in a contemporary sense, how can we ever hope to achieve people safely working?
I don't have a response to that. It feels way too intellectual for me on a Friday afternoon. Oof, my brain.
Sorry, but I know sometimes it does that make sense?
So what you're saying is essentially like we kind of, before we can define what, and I'm simplifying this massively, like what you're kind of saying is like, before we can define what good work looks like, we kind of need to define what work looks like first.
Yes.
Like, what do we define work as before we can define what enriched work looks like?
It's work for the contemporary employee, because much like, I can't remember who we were talking through this with in one of the, I think it was actually one of the tables at Yorkshire Branch yesterday was this. And they were saying that there's such a significant multi-generational difference between the perception of what it means to work that it's really hard to actually bridge that gap with one-size-fits-all health and safety initiatives, especially around mental health, because the perceptions and the needs are so different. They're so different.
But is that not inherently the problem that we are trying to get one size fits all? Yeah. Like, we're always trying to get one size fits all.
Yeah, but do we have the resource and the capacity to do more than that? Is it fair to kind of turn around here and say, all right, it's easy to say we shouldn't be doing one size fits all, but
are we not? Are we going to just keep throwing questions at each other here? But like, are we not resourcing it because we think it is a one size fits all?
Maybe. I
so
think
like in we don't ways. Resource safety in essence, because I don't think many businesses really still to this day do not appreciate actually what say or even understand what safety is. So if we're going to say let's define work before we define safe work, like most people don't even fucking understand what safety is and what it does and how it helps and stuff like that. Hence why we are not influential in this conversation, the political conversation.
So to push that back though, do the likes of operations, supply chain, FM, do they know actually how people are really working in terms of work is done? And are they basing all of their principles off effectively work as imagined? Because the outputs, not the outcomes, but the outputs of that work are consistent, are hitting the numbers, are hitting the targets, but the methodology is total, like, so devoid. There's such a gap between that work is done versus work is imagined.
The most common theory that I would die on the sword of, that to say that it is fucking true and it exists in every single business, no matter how small it is work and done work as imagined. I think a gap between work as done work as imagined exists in every business, every single business. I think the only business it doesn't exist in would probably be a sole trader that operates solely on their own, where like they quote the job and they do the job. But I'm telling you now, a customer never, there's always a gap between the customer and the deliverer as well. So I'd argue that there still is a gap in it as well. That for me is the biggest problem. No one understands work.
Let's take that to a very kind of contemporary example here. Boeing, please don't kill me. That was a joke, by the way. That literally, what are the corners that are being cut? Where are kind of the expectations of things being filled in the supply chain being missed? And actually, is the reality of that process happening as people expect it to be? Have we got, in effectively businesses as well that can be too big to fail, a huge underlying level of either corruption, consent, connivance, or neglect that might actually, it could have such a profound influence on the end-to-end supply chain of workers done versus workers imagined versus corners that are cut. We've seen it, or potentially, I mean, we've seen it definitely with Toyota in terms of how that's changed now with original safety checks that were done, that they then changed the parts over with, and then now ultimately there's decades worth of issues that have been picked up from effectively falsified safety tests. There's concerns over the quality of, I think it's titanium, that's come through from Boeing that's not been up to spec type of stuff. Bloody hell, like, these are huge issues that are coming up. I mean, the cladding for Grenfell is another great example of that as well. Stuff that should have been safe and fit for purpose that never was.
Well, I mean, I was going to go one way. I decided to go a different way. I don't think we fully appreciate how much assumption we make in the business, in our business, in any business. I think there is a simple power to merely voicing how many assumptions are being made. And I think a really simple way to play around with this is next time we're reviewing a risk assessment and you make a decision, just literally voice out, what assumptions are we making here? Oh, we're assuming that no one's going to bypass the garden. Okay, right. Yeah. Are we comfortable with that assumption? Well, no, because they could bypass the garden, couldn't they, quite easily? And then are we still liable? Well, maybe, yeah. Okay, so do we want to do something about that? Yeah. And I think if you're in a senior position within an organization and you said, hey everyone, I just want us to voice out the assumptions we're making before we make this decision, fuck me, I think you'd be there for fucking days.
True, but then again, I mean, we talk a lot about risk assessments that have happened in the context of minor accidents, right? And then something wasn't in the risk assessment at the time of the minor accident. But realistically speaking, it was a reasonable assumption to have made at the time that the context of the accident in relation to the risk assessment wouldn't have happened. But actually, if we'd written that down as a reasonable assumption in the risk assessment, would we have to tweak the risk assessment at the end? Would that then potentially save us a respective liability issue? Because we've already documented the reasonable assumption that something wouldn't have caused an issue. It's not a significant risk, because I know that obviously risk assessments, you write down your significant risks, but actually, should we also write down the reasonable assumptions at the same time? Actually, I think there's a lot of merit to that, James. I've never thought about it that way. There's a lot of merit to that.
It's funny enough, the first risk fluent risk assessment template used to have a box underneath it that said assumptions made. So I wanted to get customers to be like, right, let's voice out the assumptions that we made. Why is it not there now? If we're honest, because businesses were just like, what the fuck is this? And in the supply chain journey, none of them were comfortable putting that on and then sending their risk assessments to their contractor or their customer, and then their customer goes, hang on a minute, you've made all these assumptions without the context of like them addressing their own assumptions that they've made. They would then judge our customer on their assumptions. Like, I'm not sitting here saying that we shouldn't make assumptions, because I think we have to. We couldn't survive without making them, right? So we have to make them. But being aware of the assumptions, like, I assume my daughter's going to listen to me. Like, well, that's a bad fucking assumption right there.
Yeah. Well, so for what it's worth, James, let's look at it in the context of insurance. Obviously, the relationship between health and safety and insurers is heavily intertwined. I did my car insurance recently, and at the very end of my quote, it said, we're going to make this following assumptions to give you an appropriate quote as part of that. I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong with health and safety putting a risk assessment that at the end says, right, these are the assumptions that we would make. I mean, you could literally say it's something as simple as the ground is clean and free of debris at the time of the activity. Mm-hmm. The weather does not pose a specific risk. We could potentially, I know we're getting into kind of checklist territory here for a second, but fundamentally, is there anything wrong with making these assumptions that are simply validated at the end of the risk assessment before the activity is undertaken, especially for contractors? No, don't think there is. I don't think there is.
But this is very closely related with another thing that's been on my brain lately, actually, since Andrew Provero put a post out and tagged risk assessment about risk assessment matrices.
Before you say that, Can you finish it in the next minute and a half?
Yes. Why do we use matrices? Even though the evidence says that you don't have them, that they don't help, it's because everybody wants them. So there's a difference between doing what's right and doing what's good and doing what is the better way to do a risk assessment and what currently everybody expects. Boom. There you go. Was that a minute and a half? I'll take it.
Less than that, right? Wonderful. Genuinely, that's a really good bit of food for thought to leave kind of the end of the session is what is right, what is best for business, what's best for safety, and how do we compromise to deliver effective outcomes from it?
Time have you got to leave? You got to leave at 1:45. You need to end
literally in the next minute and a half. Yeah.
Oh, we're supposed to ask a question, aren't we?
I reckon, James, we should put a call to action now for the listeners. What questions do you want to hear us answer for the next week's session? Let's do it. And if in the meantime, James, we can come back and do a quick fire question, if we wanted to pop it out as a YouTube video or pop it out on LinkedIn, what do you reckon?
Yeah, well, it's Pete's fault because he's got a family who needs to go soon.
Oh, no. But
normally we would do a question from the audience. I haven't got one ready, so we're going to have to sack it off. Apologies. We'll do it next week. But now Pete's back. Congratulations on the babies, Peter. Hope we'll start doing this recurring episode again a little bit more. Enjoy your weekend, mate.
Amazing. You too. Take care, everyone. Cheers.
Opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.